if the screen has appeared, and it has. So thank you to Ewan. So I just want to paint a little bit of picture about myself so you know who I am, and then I've got something to share with you. Obviously, Joel made an inquiry to see if some people could share about the work that they're involved with, so that's why I've come here in my role with the Methodist Church. And you had one of my colleagues, Rob Wiley, I think, speaking here a fortnight ago about his work. So that's sort of the connection. And I'll just paint slightly more of the picture. So there's my wife and I, Sandra. We live in South Shields. So you may recognise Little Haven Beach there with the Priory, Tynemouth Priory, in the background. We have three children who are all grown up, and all but one have left home. You may guess from my accent, as someone was doing this morning, that I'm not from the UK. In fact, I've been connecting with Andrew there about our roots in New Zealand. And I've been here in the UK about 30 years now. And my connection with the UK is through my wife. She was born in Wall's End. That's sort of that part. But I do have Baptist roots. There's Newlands Baptist Church. Andrew, did you ever visit Newlands Baptist Church? In the 1980s, I was part of that for a good decade, and it was a fantastic time. As a young person, a young Christian person in New Zealand, there was a sense of revival, particularly among youth, and I was part of that. And that provided a wonderful foundation and a sense of calling too for my future was with that church. And there's another picture of them. In fact, we used to sing songs, and sometimes people speak about sort of scriptures being given to them, and that is what they hold on to. They feel the Lord has led them from that scripture. And for me, it was a song, and it was a song we used to sing in the 1980s, and the verses goes, God looks for a people, the faithful and the strong, to speak to situations and cause things to be born. Captives of a vision, singers of a song, who only live to see God's kingdom come. And I recall at about by the age of 16, having come to faith about the age of 14, by 16 I was committing my life and my future to wherever the Lord would take me and whatever he would have me do. My connection with Baptist churches continued for many years. Having come to Newcastle, we did go to Jarrow Baptist for a while and Westgate Road Baptist in Newcastle before we moved to Aberdeen. We were part of a Baptist church there and eventually ended up at Bible College, Northumbria Bible College in Berwick. And some of you may know Pastor John Hodgkins at Berwick Baptist. He and I studied together at that time. So there's a little sort of bit of background. But what Joel was asking of us to explore was just that sense of looking beyond, looking forward, sort of stretching our horizon a little bit further. And I understand he's on, is it sabbatical, is that correct? Yeah, and he's doing some thinking and research around that. And it's an area that I've sort of drifted into, and I guess under the Lord's hand, it's been great to see. So we'll be just sort of unpacking that bit here in my time with you in this service. And so I sat down about a fortnight ago and set aside a day to bring some stuff together, and I was very much struck by some things I was seeing on the news. And I don't know if you sense how sort of the Lord is speaking to you, but these things came up, and you'll recognize, I'm sure, Novak Djokovic, the tennis player, incredible tennis player. Obviously, he was runner-up this year. And then there's this rapper who I didn't know, a lady called Lizzo, and her work with the flute. And then the elderly lady there is the late mother of the Archbishop of Canterbury. And in each case, what was coming through, the theme that came through this, was something that had started in their early formative years. And it was what had started in those early years is what blossomed in later life. And so Novak came from a sporting family and they were in different pursuits. And he was got engaged with tennis, and tennis was what he wanted to do as a very young boy. I don't know about Lizzo personally, but there was a young girl on the BBC News who also played the flute. And that was the key thing about this rapper, was that she played an unusual instrument probably for a rapper, and was this flute. And this young girl at primary school here in the UK was saying she too wanted to continue to play the flute, and her vision was that she would play the flute at Glastonbury. Well, watch this space. You never know quite what will happen. I don't know so much about the Archbishop's mother, but he talked about her life journey. And it can't have been an easy one at times for some personal reasons. But he unfolded her journey of faith. And she was even personal assistant to Winston Churchill during the war years. And then later went on to work for the prison service. And then when she retired, she was a prison visitor. But in each case, it was interesting that what had started earlier on is what unfolded later on. And another part of my work that, my wife and I am now more so my wife, is that we have been foster carers. We've been foster carers for 18 years now in South Tyneside. I've got a picture of a young lad, and we've fostered a number of sibling groups. And we don't have any children with us at the moment. My wife works sort of out in the community, so to speak. But we had a boy with us for 11 years who left us just a few years ago, but we are still in touch with him. The thing I wanted to draw out of that sort of fostering context is children that have had trauma and difficulty in early life, sort of the expected ways that traditional parenting, like we did with our own three children, doesn't connect with where that child is at. And so as Rob Wiley spoke here a fortnight ago, and he talked about deconstructing church and then recreating what that faith expression looked like, in a sense, we had to deconstruct, unfold our parenting style, and you learn a new parenting style based upon the child's needs. And once we had that place of connection, we did better at being able to care for that child and to connect and communicate with that child. We learned a new language, a new style. And a sense that what had previously been distortions and disconnection, we were able to find a way around that. So just hold on to those thoughts about early childhood and disconnect and communication, and we'll unfold this theme a little bit more. Now, I don't know, do any of you recognise this statue that's in South Shields Town Centre next to Morrison's and Kirkpatrick's Pub? You may not, but I will tell you, this man is called John Simpson Kirkpatrick, and he was from sort of the South Shields area at the end of the 1800s. And he had a bit of a travel bug as a young man, and he boarded a ship and he went to Australia very early 1900s. And it was that experience that very much sort of transformed his views. He wrote to his mother and he said, "I think the UK needs a good revolution." to shake itself up. It sort of becomes static, and no one challenges the norms. We sort of accept. Now, what I read through that was that his living in Australia, he was seeing what was very much a young colony, as where I came from in New Zealand also, and it was doing different things differently. And when he was in that new context, it caused him to re-see what he thought he knew. And it caused him to revisit it and think about it and reshape it. And the reason there is a statue in South Shields is not related to that, but he went on to the First World War and served in Gallipoli, sadly only for about 3 weeks, rescuing wounded soldiers from the battlefield on his with his donkey and taking them to medical assistance. But that's the background. But it's that whole idea of when you're in a different context, it causes you to rethink what you thought you knew and accepted. Now, if we change tact slightly, I've got this growth model on the screen there. And this growth model, you could apply to many contexts. So, albeit church, where we are, or sports, or business, or perhaps other realms as well. So you start off on the left in the place that you're doing something new. And it gathers momentum, it gathers life, perhaps it increases in size and capacity and does really well, but then seems to reach that place where it's not growing anymore and sort of in that sort of stable phase. But then, of course, if new growth doesn't happen, what was happening there will shift into decline and eventually into death. And so you think of sports clubs. They'll get a new player, or they'll get a new coach, or the church gets a new minister, or in business they'll change their marketing strategy, or they'll tweak the product. And that's that bit in the middle, that sort of redevelopment, that rebirthing, that redefining, that rethinking process that's going on. And I just wonder if that's sort of where you are at a church, that you're in that process of rethinking. Now, in all those contexts, you should be always in that place, in that process of doing what you do, and you're hopefully sort of riding the waves and things are going well. But there's always that sort of looking ahead, that sort of visionary casting, leadership leading, you know, what's happening over the horizon, what is unfolding. And at the same time, there's that sort of centering process where you're connecting with the Lord and say, Lord, what are you saying? What are you speaking into this situation? What is coming? And perhaps that's something that was alluded to with the band here, with change, that you see that same sort of shape. Of growth, decline, and restart, re-energizing. Now, if we put that into the church context, growth sort of equals connection, and decline shows there's a sense of disconnection. And when Rob spoke here a week ago, I did listen to it online, he made this statement about sort of people who, not of our faith, not of our belief, he said, they don't get us. And that should cause us to be in that middle bit, that rethinking bit. And so we're sort of church. Anyone recognize this picture? All right, what is it? Beamish, okay. And so Beamish is that sort of classic, it's nostalgic. It's looking back, and people remember the coal fires and the girdle scones and think, oh, wasn't that wonderful, when it probably wasn't that wonderful. it's just what it was, when it was, of its time. And, of course, now they have the new 1950s village, and you can see those food mixes from Kenwood and stuff that you had in your kitchen and didn't realise it was a museum piece. But sort of looking back or status quo is sort of safe. It's sort of comfortable. It's known. And we sort of, it's like coming to church. It's, we sort of flow into it and we flow out of it. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But that sense of what do you want it to be? Stephen, I've forgotten my Bible. Can you bring it to me, please? And so I want us to look at a few scriptures. And the first one is Jesus with the woman at the well. And if you have your Bibles with you, it's John chapter 4. It may well be a familiar passage to some. We'll read a little bit of it. John chapter 4, verse 1. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. When the Lord learned of this, he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who is it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flocks and herds?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." And that's our first passage. And if you want to flip forward to the book of Acts, and Acts chapter 17. And this is the account of the Apostle Paul in Athens. And the picture there on the screen, the statue to the unknown God. So Acts chapter 17, starting at verse 16. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to dispute with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we want to know what they mean. All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Then Paul stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with inscription to an unknown God. What you worship as something unknown, I am going to proclaim to you." And those two passages about Jesus at the well and about Paul in Athens just give us a glimpse of something different. And of course, if you just sort of reflect on the context, that they had both come from places where which was the normal sort of religious gathering. So Jesus could have gone to Jerusalem. He could have stayed at the temple. But it's interesting that that passage says now he had to go through Samaria. Now, many of you will know that no rabbi would usually choose to go through Samaria because it was a difficult place to travel for their sort of religious background reasons. There was tension between the two ethnic groups, the Samaritans and the Jews. And yet Jesus deliberately chooses to go into this new context, and in the simplicity, in the normality of a conversation around a drink, he reveals something to this woman. And he later, for the first time to outside, not the first time at all, he reveals himself as the Messiah. And we have something similar with Paul. He's spent many a time reasoning in the synagogue, explaining to those who are already, as we would regard, as religious, wanting to share Jesus with them. And yet he's alerted to this statue when he sees what's around. And it causes him to go somewhere different to share his message. And for some, receive it, and some don't. But there's very much this sort of missional heart that's coming out in Jesus, in Samaria, and Paul and his travels, and particularly here in Athens. And so they're doing something new, and they're doing it in a different way. And so it makes you wonder, you know, what does church look like in a different context? How does it format itself? What does it look like? What do they do? But the way we express and do church does not have to conform to the past. It's interesting being here in a Baptist church. I go to Assemblies of God Church. I've been part of independent churches in church in South Shields. Coming here is distinctly Baptist. It reminds me of my Baptist experience, my Baptist roots. It is interesting how these things sort of fall and continue. But the future can be different. It doesn't have to be like looking back at Beamish and being nostalgic. It can vary itself depending on its context. And I've got another graph. Now, I'm not sure how... Oh, that's quite clear up there, if you've got good eyesight. But I just wanted to put this in to sort of stretch our sort of theological minds a little bit. Have you seen this before? I'm not repeating what someone else has bought. So if you think about sort of church work, church outreach, so on the left there, it's got sort of replicators where you do the same thing. And that's sort of the normal thing to do. So whether it's Baptist churches or Catholic churches, Assemblies of God churches, Methodist churches, if you go to one across the UK or in different parts of the world, they look and do things very similar because they've replanted exactly, they've replicated. They thought, this is good, it worked here, so we'll put it there and it will work there, okay? And so there's replicators. The next little circle is pioneer adapters, where you change something to make it more suitable for its context. So if you think of things like it's got their messy church or cafe church, that's doing something that we're familiar with, but it's doing it in a new way. And so it's sort of just moving slightly away from the sort of normal context, but it's sort of still recognized as a type of model of church. And the circle in the middle, it's called Pioneer Ventures. And it says when you move into a sort of a host context where it's focused around building relationships, offering discipleship, sort of another sort of missional step away from your normal sort of church model, church context. And the work I do in South Shields, which I'm coming to, probably sits about the middle there. And then the next circle to the right, the fourth one, again, is when you're exploring sort of spirituality in different contexts. So you think of Christians going to Glastonbury Festival, or as I know, some Methodists are going to the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh to see what they might do in the future there, in that context. And that final circle on the far right is your sort of, if you're exploring sort of working in, as it's got community activism or social enterprise, you're sort of bringing kingdom values in a different environment. Okay, so that's just sort of, if you're that way inclined, just to give you a little bit of something to hang it on, okay? But I want to come back to the idea of connecting. I started right at the beginning and how we connect with people. My parents, my family are all in New Zealand. My wife's parents, who were from Wall's End, emigrated, and they are still in New Zealand. My mother-in-law, grandmother to my children, wanted to be able to keep in touch with her children. One, our son Dean, when he was young, used to play Club Penguin. So does anybody heard of Club Penguin, or anybody want to confess to actually playing it? Okay, so our Dean, probably when he was about 7 or something, he would come home from school and play Club Penguin. And so where you take on an icon and you can talk to other people, as you might be familiar with other games, in the room or the area you are. And so his grandmother, she joined Club Penguin. And she became a penguinite, and she would be in the same virtual room that he was, and that so she could communicate and talk to him literally through that means. It was her way of narrowing that gap, reducing the distance of 13,000 miles around the world, physically cut off from her grandchildren. But she had a way to connect. She had a way to communicate that started with the child. It didn't start with her. And if you go back to the church model, that's the same thing. What is your starting point? Is the starting point is where you're at, or the starting point is where the other person is at? Okay. And so this brings to me to my work in South Shields. So I work in a coffee shop called Grace Place. It's a drop-in coffee shop just off the high street in the town centre. The lady in the middle, Angela Lishman, it was her idea, initiated, helped to get it started, and it operated as a pop-up coffee shop for quite a number of years, maybe about 6-7 years at Christmas, and then it was Christmas to Easter, just in redundant shops where she could get a short-term let. And we literally stood at the door asking people if they wanted to come in for a free cup of tea and a scone. And so that went on for many years. And bit by bit, and it was a long process, that we engaged with the community in that way. And then, of course, COVID struck and it all ground to a halt. And after a difficult period, we managed to get a shop lease, and very much sensing the Lord was in that. And so in my work with the Methodist Church for the past 11 years, the past year I've been working at Grace Place. It's open 3 days a week, 11 till 3, people come and join in with it. What was interesting about this lady, Angela, she has a background in medicine, but the sort of roots of her heart, of course, started when she was a child in her Christian family, and what God was sort of nurturing a heart of compassion, really, particularly for the underdog, those who are perhaps not thought of so often. And so this is Grace Place. This photo was probably taken a year ago, perhaps. It looks like a Jubilee celebration or something. There's me on the right there chatting to some young men. And people come past. We have quite a gathering now. We might have up to 70 guests in a session who come through our doors. Some stay for 3 minutes and have a quick cuppa and run off. Some stay the entire session and just sit and chat. And for many, I think if there's the one common thing, it's that wanting to connect. People who are lonely or isolated want to have somewhere to go, want to have somewhere to be, and they very much sort of connect with what Grace Place is. I would also say that the ministry is difficult. At times it's messy. It's never straightforward. Sometimes it's problematic. And there's that sense that at times we are vulnerable. We're not the dominant voice, which we're sometimes used to in church contexts. And there's a wide demographic that come. There's many young, unemployed men who are probably between late teens and 40s. There's some older women who come. And there's sort of everybody in between. And I guess the coffee and cake is the easy bit. The Christ bit and the connection is the harder bit. And so part of my role has been sort of to tease out what that means. How could we do it? What would it look like? What shape would it take? And how can we make it fit our new context? And so we eventually started late last year a talking group, Mondays, 1 o'clock, Talking Life. And we use table talk cards, which are really good to help us have subjects and themes. They're not overtly religious or Christian, but there are certain questions in that that give the opportunity to talking about faith. The evoke cards are picture cards. And so we've had about 33 sessions, and we'll probably have our last one for the summer, Monday coming. And it's interesting, some people love it, and some people avoid it. But we do manage to get some. And so we're bit by bit, we've been able to sort of shape this community and the group of people. And it's lovely to see how they care for each other. The people come in and bring food and they share it with each other and they look after and they look out for each other. But anyway, this was my first way of sort of bringing more overt faith into that that context. Second way, here we go. It's me doing godly play stories. Anybody heard of godly play? So godly play is started in America, a man called Jerome Berryman. It's a very slow and deliberate verbatim storytelling of Christian stories, whereby the listener is drawn in and focused on the story that's being developed. It's extremely powerful, and it's very, very good. So we started doing this every second month on a Wednesday afternoon. We would open for 1 hour for that specific sort of Christian event. And we've seen a few people, half a dozen people at a time, perhaps coming to those storytelling. So that was a Christmas one. We don't use religious words. There you go. You see, it's called Story and Wondering. And there's me doing the Good Shepherd earlier this year, and likewise there's me with a rather gormy photo doing the Easter one. But they have been a way where we've been able to sort of cut through the religious background of the United Kingdom, where people have such nominal understanding or nominal grasp of what God is or Jesus is, and found that this storytelling method has been able to connect in a way that they haven't connected in the past. Okay, two other things. We have a prayer board, so those sticky post-it notes on the wall, people write their prayer needs and they can pray there in that little chapel part. Obviously, in pastoral context, we sometimes pray with people at the coffee table. I spend an awful lot of my time in those 11 to 3 sessions sitting and talking about everyday things with people and building relationships with them. And the Grace Web, the idea behind was that was building this sense of community. And so we started taking, with permission of course, photographs of the guests that come. And bit by bit, people have wanted to have their photographs taken. And we asked them sort of questions, why do you come to Grace Place? What does Grace Place mean to you? And virtually without exception, the word is that we just love the people. We love the staff, they care for us, and we can talk to people. We've been really much out to shape a community there. And for all its warts, it's making a difference and it's making a contact. And the next thing that is coming up in September, I've been reflecting more about how do we take people's spiritual understanding, how do we provide that opportunity at the next step. I thought of this idea, we would have something called pause, which essentially is a devotion or a meditation at the start of the day. So before we open at 11 o'clock, there'll be just a 10-minute period of something that people who arrive early, and there are people who line up at our door early, if they want to, they can come and participate in that. So we just try to provide these little stepping stones, bit by bit, for people to explore who Jesus is just that little bit further. And I don't know if you've seen this picture before, very contemporary picture, looks very Americanized. But it's quite a good one because it just makes us realize in our context that, Jesus hung out with people who religious people didn't hang out with. It may have looked and felt a bit different. And in a way, Grace Place is a bit like that. And so we're looking for where God is at work. You think about blind Bartimaeus calling out for Jesus. Well, who's calling out now? Are they shouting or is it a whisper? Galatians 4 talks about those who were enslaved being now brought into freedom. So the question is, who are the enslaved? Who doesn't look like me? Who doesn't look like us? And that's the challenge for the church. So the missional context, and I enjoyed seeing the video about the work in Chad, but the need in the UK is absolutely desperate. And I remember our principal at Bible College at Berwick. He'd been a missionary in Nigeria with his wife and children for a number of years. And this is probably, 30 odd years ago. And they'd come back at some stage, maybe it was furlough. And he was surprised at the state of the UK church. And his focus then became not on overseas mission, but home mission, and raising up people who would re-envisage how the church responded to ministry in more Western contexts. And let me sort of start to draw this to an end. I had this sense that when I was preparing for this, that something is already, an idea is already here. I don't know if it's someone in this congregation. Someone already has it. And some years ago, if you know South Shields, they redeveloped a new sea wall on the promenade at Little Haven Beach. Done a lovely job. And they landscaped around the car park. But and they planted a lot of it. But the bit that faced the sea, they just left it is barren dirt, barren soil. And of course, within about a year and two, it's flourishing and it's green with all sorts of grasses and nettles. And I talked to a lady that I know who's quite involved with sort of ecological things. She says, do you know that the seeds are already in the soil? She says, if you take a microscope and look at soil, the seeds are already in there. They're not just blowing in. I thought that was absolutely fascinating, because we have the parable of the sower sowing the seeds. We give it out. Perhaps God has already planted something. Has he already planted something in you? Is there an idea that's sort of awaiting that opportunity to come out, to germinate? When Joel comes back and perhaps this sort of thinking starts to be shaped a little bit more, have you already got something inside you that you want to share? I just wonder, I had this idea. Maybe it's that God moment. And finally, we talk about the coming of the Holy Spirit. We think about the book of Joel being foretelling the coming of the Spirit. Acts chapter 2 is when it comes. It talks about visions and dreams. And I guess I always thought that they were sort of something that would pop into your head. And that does happen, of course. Perhaps there's something that will take hold in you. But perhaps the vision and the dream is already there. Perhaps it's like Angela and the work at Grace Place. It's just waiting for that time. Perhaps that time is now. Perhaps that horizon is not far away anymore, but a lot closer. Thank you for listening. You enjoyed that. And I'll come back. I think the worship team's coming up to lead us in a song. And as they get ready, I'll just leave a moment of silence. You just might want to close your eyes. Lord, come and speak.